down, people have more spendable income. What's cutting across anything now? What are you doing on your ship to appeal to this crowd that you never would have done before?
Yeah, good question. You know, what we really focus on in the luxury end of the market is trying to create those authentic experiences, real experiences that connect with guests, whether it's a service experience on board the ship, whether it's something we do ashore that is unique and different. It is finding that way to touch people, and that is that's universal. People want an experience that is very real and very personalized.
And they also have a certain comfort level expectation.
They do,
right? I mean, they want to see brand. It's no longer guess the age of the mystery hot dog in the rotisserie. They want, to the extent that it doesn't get out of control, they want branded experiences too.
They want branded experiences. They want something that's unique. In our case on Seabourn, you're able to go on a Seabourn ship and have an incredible meal that has been designed by a 3-star Michelin chef, Chef Thomas Keller, and that's a experience that is really really pretty fantastic.
And you can basically accommodate the cost in there because you build it into the cost of the cruise.
It's all included into that value proposition. And people in the whole industry in general, we do such a great job of including so much value into the cruise fare.
Well, one of my pet peeves is the word or the misuse of the word or the term all-inclusive, because it usually is followed by an asterisk. And the asterisk is usually the industry's acknowledgement they're about to lie to you, right? It's like all-inclusive asterisk, except for the following 623 items, right? So on Seabourn, you pride yourself, at least last time I looked, in being all-inclusive, right?
We do, absolutely. And so on Seabourn, we serve fine wines and spirits that are complimentary, not only in the bars and lounges,
but these are premium brands.
These are premium brands. Right. These are beautiful, beautiful cocktails and good wines. It's certainly, in addition to that, the level of service is spectacular. All the gratuities are included in the fare. There's a whole host of things that we call those special Seabourn moments. We don't necessarily always talk about them in advance, but you know when they happen on board.
All right. So here's my question. What's not included?
What's not included in our fare would be shore excursions, those things you want to do when you go ashore. Any type of items you might like to buy on board in the gift shop,
of course, that's obvious,
or casino.
But there was a time on a number of cruise lines that billed themselves as all-inclusive, mm-hmm. that even included caviar.
And it does on Seabourn, so we do not have a charge for our caviar.
So unlimited.
Unlimited. So and it's
Rick, you just said the magic word, I'm coming, baby.
It's beautiful caviar, I'd add.
So the idea is not just that it's all inclusive, but the concept that you don't have to go to your wallet every 5 minutes.
You don't. And it also creates a club-like atmosphere on board. So if you meet another couple that you enjoy their company and you'd like to sit down,
have some caviar on me.
Yeah, have some caviar, have a drink, and you don't have to worry about who's going to pay the bill. So it makes it really, really nice to get to know people.
I love it. Rick Meadow, the CEO of Seabourn and Cunard, thanks for joining us. I'll see you on the caviar deck.
Great, Peter. Thank you. Thanks for the hospitality.
Back with more right after this.
Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Fincantieri shipyards near Trieste in Italy. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, easy. Just email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will we'll solve it right here in the air. We'll be doing that in just another 2 segments or so. But, you know, here we are at the shipyard. We talked earlier with Vago Perfrancesco, who really was giving us the whole lowdown of the largest ship ever built at this shipyard, which is called Seaside. And it's not just the name of the ship. It's the class of the ship when you think about it. And joining me now, the project director and the coordinator for all this, who's got a big job because this is one big ship. His name is Nemo Lubrano. I got it, didn't I, Nemo?
Yes.
I did. So when you design a ship like this, you know, it's one thing to sit down at a dinner table and map it out on a napkin or come up with a concept. But then you're talking pages and pages and pages of drawings and concepts and design work, because when you design a ship, it's all about the space. It's all about the functionality. It's all about the seaworthiness. It's all about the materials. You're going out there in salt water. right?
Yes, correct.
So what have you learned in incorporating into the design of the ship to make sure that all that works?
Yeah, from the beginning we started from a concept, and we just wanted to highlight that Seaside project, it will be not like just any other cruise, of course a new prototype and a vessel for everyone. So from the family.
So those are the orders you were given. Do this differently.
Yes, completely different project from the others, and of course also from our competitors. And we focus especially, we call Seaside the ship that follows the sun. So the entire ship is fought for open space, for open air, and for just to make our guests can enjoy the open space. That's why we have the one of the highest ratio compared to other, of course, cruise vessel, about the open air available space per guest.
But you also have to, once you're going to have all that open space, you have to come up with ideas about wind and weather and what happens if it's raining, what happens if it's too cold, right?
Yeah, of course, if it's rain, we have an available space, indoor space.
You have a sliding roof too? A sliding roof or no?
Yes, we have a macrodome.
Yeah.
That will cover one of the main pool of our vessels, and of course about the wind, such ships will be certified by our class register, that is RINA, for comfort class. That means that also during the navigation, so during the sailing of the ships, our guests are in a comfortable area, even if it is outside.
So no matter where you go, you'll be okay.
Sorry?
No matter where you go on the ship, you'll be okay.
Yes, for sure. For sure.
What other design factors? You know, when talking to Vago, he was saying to me, you know, well, you know, his mother-in-law wants this kind of material, and she wants this, and she wants that. You have to work with that too.
Yes, for sure. With our architects, we enjoyed these new vessels, and we featured every single space with the best materials, the best colors, the best shape, the best functionality, and so on.
Let's talk about color. Yeah. I'm sure that you've done enough study over the years to figure out what colors work and what colors don't. Is there a color you'll never put on a ship?
No, to be honest, I don't know. But I don't think that maybe any colors is...
No, because you know, there are certain colors on an airplane, for example. They'll never put, like, you know, hospital green inside an airplane because mm-hmm. people get sick, right? Right? So I'm sure that in some areas you have to say, no, this color is just not going to work. We want another color.
We try, of course, to have a compromise.
Okay, so is there a material? Is there a material you won't use? Meaning, there are certain materials that will work well. I'm not certain that leather is going to do outside very well. I mean, you have to figure out. You learn by experience what
yes,
works and what
sure,
doesn't.
For sure. From our histories, we learned a lot in terms of functionality of the materials.
Like what?
For example, marbles, carpet, and all the others, aluminium, stainless steel, and so on.
Okay, so what did you learn about marble? Where does it work and where does it not work?
We choose to fit the vessels. We choose, of course, the best marble, let me say.
So you're using a lot of marble?
We are using marble, yeah.
That's what I'm saying, right.
Yeah, and we select from the cave, the first block of this marble, and of course, of the production will increase, will be increased on board on the vessels.
So marble's heavy, right?
Yeah.
But the weight doesn't matter that much on a ship this big, I suppose.
No, of course, the weight is also, it was also important from our vessel, because more is the weight, let me say, from a technical point of view,
from performance.
more will be the fuel consumption, and maybe worse will be the performance.
Nemo Lubrano, the project director here and working with the design team, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide when we return to the shipyard, Pinkontery, right after this.
Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
43 minutes after the hour. Peter Greenberg here with you, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know exactly what to do. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com, and that's what we're going to do right now. Answer some of your emails. Here's one from Pete Silberman, who says, "We travel on Star Alliance carriers from New York on United, connecting to Air New Zealand, and we return the same way. We had to make a change on the return itinerary for a medical stop over in L.A., returning then to New York. We called United Airlines and Air New Zealand because the ticketing was done on an Air New Zealand ticket. Upon return to New York from L.A., we called United to get some clarification on baggage and club access and made several calls pertaining to those issues." By the way, anytime you're making several calls just to get access to their club, the club's not worth it. Okay, but forgetting that, your issue is this. "Each person at United gave me different information, but finally on the last leg and after speaking to an expert in the club lounge department of United and after being assured by Roxanne that we were both entitled to club access, we were treated appallingly with a line behind us at the club at LAX. Here's the deal. When you're dealing with strategic alliances, whether it's One World or Star or the Sky Team, everybody has different rules. And whatever status you have on one airline doesn't necessarily translate to status on their partner carrier. And whatever goodies you get from one doesn't necessarily mean you have goodies in the other than the opportunity to sit in a seat, maybe not even of your own choosing. Each airline retains control of their own inventory. They retain control over their own frequent flyer program and the inventory in that program. And they retain control over the inventory on who gets access to their lounge. And it's not just based on the class of service you're flying. It's based on whether or not you're a member of their program. Now, on the Star Alliance, which I find interesting, I have what's called Star Alliance Gold, which means that if I go to any other lounge in the Star Alliance program, which would be Lufthansa or Thai, I mean, I could go down the whole Air New Zealand, I would get access to their lounge. But if you're just flying as a companion on somebody else who has the ticket and has the pass, that doesn't mean it's them plus a guest in those other lounges. Every airline differs. It's a little crazy. And if you want to hear a wilder story, I'm a lifetime member of the Delta Airlines. It used to be called the Crown Room. Now it's called the Sky Club. But I've been a lifetime member since the mid-70s. By the way, lifetime memberships in those days cost $300. They don't sell lifetime memberships anymore, but when they did, a couple of years ago, they went as high as like $8,000. So I go to use the card the other day at a Delta Sky Club, and I was told that my membership had expired. But wait a second, I'm lifetime. So I looked at the woman, and I had my card that said lifetime. And I said, "Here's the problem. Either I've died or you've died. And since we're both alive and my card says lifetime, I'm coming in." She says, "Oh, no, the computer says your membership expires." I said, "It can't. It's lifetime." So everybody has different rules. And when I complained to Delta, you know what they did? They sent me a new membership card that expires in a year. But I'm lifetime. So at the end of the day, the only clubs that are worth it are on international carriers because they really go over and above and beyond. I was just on Turkish Air. Their club in Istanbul, I would like to move in and establish permanent residence. It's larger than most airline terminals. They have 40 different stations for every kind of food you'd want. You want to play pool, there's a pool table. You want to listen to piano music, there's a piano playing. You want to practice your golf swing, there's a virtual golf simulator. You want to race cars? They got motor tracks. And you want to go to the movies? They got a movie theater there with popcorn. I'm amazed anybody makes their flight. I mean, because it's so much fun. Same thing with the Cathay Pacific Lounge in Hong Kong. That lounge is unbelievable with a long bar, and they serve Haagen-Dazs ice cream. Hey, get out to the airport early, boys and girls. Now listen, the reality is, we don't go to airports to move in. We don't go to the airports to entertain our friends or to have fine dining. Every once in a while, there are surprises like Turkish Airlines in Istanbul and Cathay Pacific in Hong Kong. But the reality is, I don't want to go to an airport. I just want to get through an airport because I'm not there to do anything other than get on a plane and leave. I always like to joke when you see rocking chairs at an airport terminal, it seems like a nice touch, except what's the message they're sending to you? You're going to be here a while. So I wouldn't make four or five calls, as you did, Pete, to figure out whether you'd have lounge access. The point is, they're highly overrated with the exceptions I just gave you. You have Lufthansa in Frankfurt, which is an amazing lounge. You have, of course, Cathay in Hong Kong. And now you have Turkish in Istanbul. And I'm about running, and the Virgin Clubhouse in London. That's about it. Everybody else, it's a bag of peanuts and a photograph of what you would have enjoyed 5 years ago. So as long as we understand that, we're in good shape. Now, doesn't mean you shouldn't write a letter and complain, because people gave you wrong information and it was misleading information, and for that, they should at least apologize. The bottom line is, don't get too excited about a lounge that's overrated to begin with. We'll be back with more Peter Greenberg Worldwide when we return right after this.
Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from Trieste, believe it or not, in Italy, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. You know, visiting a shipyard is always fascinating for me because if you can understand the process, then maybe you might understand and appreciate the product. But right now, to visit a shipyard anywhere in the world, it's like hold on to your horses because they're all working at 100% capacity. I've never seen this kind of volume in years. And joining me now, the editor for World of Cruising and Captain Greybeard himself, John Honeywell. How are you, John?
I'm good, thank you. Nice to be here in Italy.
Yeah, so, I mean, are you surprised at the amount of shipbuilding that's going on?
I am, because it's been building up gradually over the last few years, and we've now got more ships on order than ever before, more money committed to building them, and MSC, who are the reason we're here today, have got more ships on order than any other single brand.
Now, isn't that interesting? Because they only have, if you take a look at the entire fleet of MSC, they only have 12 ships. They're not like 100-plus ships like Carnival or Royal Caribbean or not even NCL, and yet they're the ones that have committed the most money for the most ships.
And they've committed the money further ahead than anybody else because they've got orders for ships that will be delivered through to 2026.
All right, so as a keen observer of this business, what do you think they know that other people don't?
I've just been talking to one of their senior executives who explained that one of the reasons they can do it is because they're a privately held company and they don't have shareholders interfering, or they don't have to answer to shareholders, and the banks know them very well and are prepared to put up the money.
And it's a lot of money.
They've got billions invested, or will have, in these new ships coming over the next 10 years.
You know, there's an argument, and I've seen it happen in the airline business. When a new plane comes out, somebody makes a humongous order for more planes than they'll ever, ever need, because their philosophy is, we'll control the production line, and then if anybody else wants one of these planes, they're going to have to get them from us. Right, it's about selling off your options. You think that's the game here?
I don't think it works quite the same. It's not the same in terms of numbers. There is an element of cruise lines placing orders for ships in order to book slots in the yards and prevent their competitors from building ships.
Exactly.
But they don't, you know, MSC or whoever are not building a ship to sell it onto Carnival.
Right. In fact, I understand of trying to keep people from getting slots in the yard.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about another thing that used to happen that's not happening that much anymore, and that is, you know, you get a cruise ship and the normal amortization and the more normal lifespan of some of these ships in the old days was about 12 years, and then they'd sell off that tonnage to somebody else, and it would go to some third world operator. You'd never see it except by accident. That's not happening that much anymore.
The second-hand usage is sometimes starting at 15 years, but more and more they're being kept longer and longer, and the ships have a life nowadays of 30 years and more.
30 years?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever would have expected that.
There are the odd ship around. You probably don't see them in the U.S. We get them in the U.K. and in Europe.
They're really
old.
It's
been
ones.
Around for 50, 60 years, and they're for a particular sort of audience these days because they don't have the climbing walls and the ice skating rinks and
right. They're not a shopping mall that floats. They're not
They're not a shopping mall at sea. No.
No. One of those ships, in fact, that we're doing a big story on CBS, the Stockholm,
mm-hmm.
Which has now been around for almost 70 years. And that's almost hard to imagine given current safety requirements, current fuel requirements, current environmental requirements. That ship is still out there.
There are a few that can keep going. I mean, despite all the changes in safety regulations, they can keep it operating. They are much more expensive to operate in terms of fuel and manning and everything. So the ships that are being built today, apart as well as having all the facilities that nobody would have ever dreamt of could be happening, it could be done at sea. They are more efficient, they're cheaper to run, they're cleaner.
Oh, sure.
And they just, you know, they work better commercially.
I remember the SS France, which then became the Norway. If you went into their engine room, you had like 30 or 40 guys had to be down there at all times. How many guys are in an engine room of a new ship today at any time?
That's a good question. They don't let me into the engine room, I'm afraid.
Well, just for that, John, I'm going to answer that question. Five.
Five.
Sure, because it's sort of like airline pilots. They don't fly the plane. They monitor systems. And so you eliminate, 35 people from the mix, you're saving a lot of money on your operating costs.
Absolutely.
What else is new about the ships that you're seeing being built today?
I just came off Ovation of the Seas last weekend, Royal Caribbean ship, which is dedicated to Chinese audience. So one new thing I've seen is signage in Mandarin.
And a larger casino.
And a very much larger casino. And baccarat tables that I've not really seen on any other ship. And a VIP high rollers area in the casino.
Yeah, so the ship will be rolling and the high rollers will be rolling.
And they will.
And it's a huge profit center for the ship at that point.
It will be.
It's not going to be just rock climbing walls.
And they have the biggest Cartier shop at sea as well.
Oh, did you have to tell me that? John Honeywell, the editor for World of Cruising, and Captain Greybeard. Hey, that music means we're out of time for the entire show. Lots of people to thank. Dara Stone, our chief producer. Jeff Ryder doing the boards for us back in Connecticut. Tim Hill doing the engineering work right here in Italy. Lucy Ellis and Luca Biondolio of MSC Cruises. Hey, guys, we'll see you next week from a different location somewhere around the world. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com.